news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Hey, did you know that you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram?
That's right. Just go to facebook.com/marriedreviews or instagram.com/marriedreviews. Now, Tasha, this is where you say enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Lex Podcast. I am Lex.
I'm Latasha.
There we go. I definitely wanted to get that. I wanted to get you introducing yourself from now on. I think it sounds weird when I introduce you for some reason.
I was almost wondering, I was like, why is he pausing? What's going on? This wasn't scripted. Not that anything really is.
Not that our whole show is scripted or anything.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
As your phone buzzes and tells you what to say. We are going to do something a little bit different tonight. We have two theatrical releases we're going to review. Those films are As Above, So Below and The 100-Foot Journey. And then we have two home video releases that we're going to be reviewing. Draft Day and the Grand Budapest Hotel. Both of those came out earlier this year. Obviously, they're on home video now, so we'll get to those as well. But first, I wanted to ask you what you were excited about coming up in the theater game, as it were. I'm surprised you even have to think about this.
No, well, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it so I don't come across as totally nerdy. But too bad, it's going to happen anyway. So, our theater only brings in about 3 new films each week, and there are some weeks that there are, like, an outrageous amount of films coming out, like, 6 or so. So, obviously, they have to pick and choose. A good example is The 100-Foot Journey actually was released at the beginning of August, but just came to our theater last weekend at the end of August. So we got it a few weeks late, and slated on their website as coming out this week was only 1 film. So I was wondering what the heck they were going to do, if they were going to, you know, throw some other ones in there last minute. And they did, so some films that have already come out, they are going to be playing this weekend, and I'm not even going to pretend to be embarrassed or anything by it, but I'm so excited for the Step Up movie because I love movies about dancing. It's awesome.
How many Step Ups is this so far?
1, 2, 3, 4. This is the 5th one?
Jeez Louise.
Because there's Step Up, Step Up to the Street, Step Up 3D, Step Up. Is it called Revolution or is that what this one is? I don't know. I think this is the 5th one.
This is Step Up All In.
There we go. So this is the 5th one.
Right up there right now.
Yes. And I'm pumped for it because I'm totally nerdy like that. So.
All right.
I can't wait to have to hear your reaction to it though. I think I'm looking forward to us sitting down in this environment in a week to discuss it because you haven't seen any of them, right?
No, not that it matters.
I'm just gonna saying though, because at least you know, this has characters from previous films coming together and everything. So for me, it's gonna make sense.
I'm sure I'll give credit to the dancing and everything.
Cause it's badass.
Not that I'm a huge dancing fan, but I'm probably gonna be pretty harsh on the story and all that stuff.
The story will probably suck. That's usually the case in these sorts of movies because it's not about the story. Right. It is about the dancing.
Right. Can it stay above Neighbors and Sex Tape level? We'll have to wait and see, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Is there something you're excited for?
I really hope that our theater gets Boyhood.
Me too. I really, really want to see that one.
Because that's a trailer that looks like it's...
Well, I mean, they made cinematic history with that. Yeah. So why wouldn't I want to watch it in the theater setting and be a part of that?
It's weird. I get, like, emotional when I see the trailer. Just because...
Which says something.
You see the...
If you get emotional with a 90-second trailer, like...
Right, exactly.
It's doing its job.
Right. So, I hope we get that. I'm sure we will. I just don't know when.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the trailer for it with the 100-Foot Journey. So,
yeah, that was interesting.
Doesn't mean we'll get it, though.
Right.
So, I hope we get that. And I hope we get Life Itself, a documentary about Roger Ebert. Because I think it's a really important film. Obviously, we're doing a podcast around critiquing movies. And I know a lot of people say,
he's
I don't like them.
Pioneer for it.
Yeah, I don't like them. They hate on everything. You know, they love movies. And
also, you have to think, like, we've only been doing this for a little while, and I've noticed the evolution of our reviews going from more like, oh, I didn't like it, I liked it, to I like the angles they use, and I like the color they, you know, we're getting a little bit more technical in our reviews. So I can understand that after 40 years of doing it, you're going to get super technical, and you're going to look at all aspects of it. So.
Well, not only that, when you're doing it for 40 years, and then you get a movie like, I don't know, just throwing one out there, but The Pest, or something like that, where it's like a really, really dumb movie, and it's like, oh, I've seen these great movies, and then it's like, I've got to see this one, and it's like... Okay, well, that is for a specific audience, but...
It's like dining in a fine dining restaurant and then turning around and having a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly. Which I love.
Can't really compare the two. All
right, so we're going to go ahead and kick it off with our home video releases so far. And I say home video because DVD, everybody's moved on to Blu-ray. So some people are still stuck on DVD, so you can't really say DVD. You can't really say Blu-ray. You just kind of... And there's the digital, too, so it's...
But to me, home movie, and please, listeners, let me know if anybody agrees.
Home movie, yes.
Yeah, but when you're saying home video, to me, that's still, like...
You never, when you're watching the VHSs, you're watching the trailer, you never realize, coming soon to home video.
Well, now that you say that, yeah, but still, to me, home video makes me think that you're going to sit down and watch your own family footage from birthday parties
Admittedly,
and Christmases.
It's an older term, I
it
guess.
It is. The dog!
The dog is barking. I asked her before we started podcasting, the dog isn't barking. What are the odds it starts barking? So it drives me nuts, and I know it drives you guys nuts. I'm so sorry, but this is the best we can do. Sans putting ourselves in a closet, which it would be really hot because we turn the AC off too. And there's no AC in the closet anyway. Anyway, let's get on to our home video release reviews here. Kevin Costner plays an NFL general manager torn between making the draft pick that the team owner wants and making the draft pick that he wants in the film Draft Day, the first of our home video reviews this week on Married Movie Reviews. Costner portrays fictional Sonny Weaver Jr., the aforementioned general manager of the Cleveland Browns. Sonny is coaxed into making a trade for the number one overall pick by the owner, but Sonny knows that the player he wants can be had at a much lower price. It's up to Sonny and his team of scouts, coaches, and office personnel to find out everything there is to know about the consensus number one overall pick, a cocky and somewhat morally bankrupt quarterback played by Josh Pence, or making some moves to get the player that Sonny really wants, a standout linebacker played by Chadwick Boseman. Draft Day is a thrilling, subtly funny sports flick that is reminiscent of what we had more of in the 80s and 90s with films like Bull Durham, Major League, Field of Dreams, and A League of Their Own. There's a lot to like about Draft Day, but some might get lost in the football jargon, heavy script. Still, Draft Day can't be slept on for me. It's a number one pick all day. 4.5 out of 5.
You guys like how he added in that little one-liner?
I got it. I got to pepper in the little relatable lines. But yeah, I love this film. And I'm biased, I admit. You know, the NFL draft.
You went and picked it up the day it came out.
Of course. Well, I went and saw it in theaters, too.
Yeah, which,
you hadn't, so
again,
we didn't do the review
prior
yet.
To this whole subscription thing, you had only seen a few movies in the last year. And this was one of those few.
Yeah, so this is one I had to go and see. I went and saw it on, like, the last day, so I only got to see it once. Or I would have went multiple times to the theater to see it.
Would you really have?
Yeah, absolutely. I've watched the film twice since I've gotten it. I watched it again today.
Did you?
With the commentary on. But yeah.
Nice.
The NFL draft is the most interesting thing in sports for me. It's my favorite thing in sports. I don't know what it is. I guess it's the fact that, like, if you go to law school, you don't get drafted by a firm in Des Moines. You get to pick where you want to go, you know? Where in football, your college, you go through the draft. And so...
That's a lovely analogy. Yeah, Thank you for that. Yeah. Football and lawyers.
Yeah, well, I mean, all you right. go to college for it. Well, not sort of. Yeah, well, I mean, for some people, the only way they get to go to college is because of football. But anyway, you go through this draft process, and you, for the most part, really don't have a choice in whether or not you get to play for this team or that team. If you want the most money, you go into the draft. If you got really big swing, maybe you can, you know, say, I'm not going to play for you, trade me. Or I'll just sit out for a year.
You must have big cojones to do that.
Exactly.
Though, right?
And it's only happened twice in NFL history. Once in 1983 with John Elway, and then once again in 2004 with Eli Manning. And so, you know, the whole draft process, the things that they go through, and it's portrayed in this film, the things they go through to figure out, because they're giving these guys a lot of money, like, you know, between $50 and $70 million.
Yes, please.
And they've got to do their due diligence, and they've got a security guy that pulls up background information. I'm sure with
which that character cracked me up.
Yeah,
because it was just like
funny guy.
So, this is what's going on. Well, do you want to know more?
you can tell he really gets off on. I figured this out.
And then yeah, the let's suspense play a game. Of like, I'm going to hold it over your head until you're practically begging for the info.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in this film is basically about the owner wants the most prolific player in the draft so that they can sell tickets.
Bo Callahan.
Yeah, this quarterback, Bo Callahan. He's got, you know, the slick back hair. And
he's a cocky sumbitch.
Yeah, he's pretty cocky. Although he's not all that cocky. They don't go overboard with it, and they don't, you know, shove it in her face. But every time you see him, he's got kind of a whatever demeanor. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like more worried about getting dressed or what he's gonna wear.
Yeah,
he's gonna, you know, he's more worried about how much money he's gonna make. So the whole point of the film is there's this player, this linebacker, Vontae Mack, played by Chadwick Boseman, who is the guy Sonny Weaver, guy who plays Kevin Costner, really wants.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows he's a great player. He is confident in the quarterback they already have. And so it's all about, I guess, trying to... And that's what makes the film interesting. In the beginning, right off the bat, he digs himself into a hole that you don't know he's going to get out of. I guess you can kind of predict that everything's going to turn out for the best at the end.
Who called it?
But, I mean, he digs himself in a hole. He trades away the three number one picks for the next 3 years for this one number one pick because the owner said, you know, I want you to make this trade. I want this quarterback to make a splash, as he says.
Mm-hmm. Make it happen.
Exactly. So he goes through this whole process of trying to, you know, I guess fighting with, should I take this quarterback? Is there anything we don't know about him? You know, and then there's things reported like, oh, well, nobody showed up to his 21st birthday party. And then he says, well, maybe that's a big thing. He looks into it, and then it's like, oh, maybe that's not a big thing. And then by the end, it's like, okay, it is a big thing. I was right, or to, you know, trust my guys all along. But I guess the whole journey of taking that ride along with him is pretty interesting in my eyes. What do you think about Costner as this performance? I mean, it's very Costner performance.
Well, I was thinking while watching it that I haven't seen him in anything in a while. So, you know, it's been a while.
He's a lot lower profile, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, could be good or bad. So it was kind of refreshing to see him, you know, playing another part. I thought he did it well. You know, he wasn't over the top. He wasn't too underwhelming. I think it was good, like right level where it needs to be. then again, I know nothing about football. I know nothing about the draft.
Right.
You know, I've mentioned in the past that I enjoy football movies because most of the time they're not football focused, but it's more about like the team and, you know, this and that.
Right.
So we actually watched this movie together, which we don't do with any of the theater releases that we watch. So I felt bad because I had to keep asking questions like, explain how the draft works to me. Explain this, you know, why is this number one pick versus number whatever such a big deal? So I kind of had to have a little lesson in all that and how it works. So if you are like me and know diddly squat about football, you're probably going to be confused unless you have somebody that can kind of explain the process to you like you did for me.
Right.
But once I kind of understood it and everything, I feel like it's a good film. You know, I feel like it's very well done, and, you know, they did a really good job of portraying the, you know, okay, Cleveland Browns are on the clock and you've got this 10-minute clock counting down, and
yeah, that was the best
part.
Are
we taking this person? What are we doing? Right. I got so and so on the phone. Are we making this trade? Yeah. What's going on? And you know, you've got 10 minutes to make this decision, which can affect, you know, everybody's life for the next year plus. Yeah. So I think that they did a really good job of showing, you know, the what is the word I want?
Tension?
Yes, there we go. Showing the tension of that and how you really have to make those quick decisions, or, you know.
Yeah, that last third act is pretty much all
in the war room. I think that was the best
part
of the film.
Right, and it all builds up to that, and it's kind of like all this stuff happens and you get these nuggets and, you know, they're good and everything, but it's like you haven't seen anything yet because the third act is coming, and that's what the film is really based on, is in that, we call them the war room, in that war room with all the scouts and everything, but there's only one commander in there, and it's, you know, Costner, whoever the GM is, and they've got to make these decisions on the fly. They've got to call these other GMs up. They've got to convince them. It's the biggest sales pitch, you know.
Especially what kind of was interesting to me is when he's on the phone talking to, what is it, Jacksonville? Mm. Who has a rookie GM and everything, and he's like, I don't know what we're going to do. They took my first choice. They took my second choice. I have no idea who I'm going to take. And that kind of made me realize that would be hard, because, like, I'm a planner. Like, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
So if that gets tweaked, I flip out, because it's hard for me to, like, readjust with those sorts of things. So just to imagine, like, this setting, which is so much more amplified than anything I do in my own little life.
You've got the TV on and everything.
Yeah, you know, so it's just, like, that really made me realize, like, oh, damn, that could be very stressful.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah. I love the way, though, that the film did, you know, you start out in the morning and there's a clock counting down 12 hours till the draft, and it shows, like,
it's all on the same
12
day.
Seconds worth of that little clock ticking down, and you know, the seconds are moving, and then, you know, later it shows that now we're 8 hours away, and now we're, you know, five and a half hours away. So I thought that was pretty cool that it did that. And I also loved when it would go to, you know, it would show the Seattle skyline, and then you'd see Seattle,
beautiful
home of the Seahawks,
shots of the,
and
cities,
know, Kansas City,
right,
you know, like, and all of this
stadiums.
Sort of stuff. I thought that was really well done and really cool, and
right.
Not something you see a ton with films.
They really,
so visually
it
was amazing.
They really made it like a grand, you know, a lot of grand shots in there.
Mm-hmm.
They also did this thing where split screen, when they would be on
the
phone calls.
The split screen was amazing.
Basically, they would have a split screen, guy over here, guy over there talking to each other on the phone, and then one guy would be walking around the room and would actually cut across the screen of the other guy and into the a separate split screen.
His arm is like in the other guy's shot, and then it's like
it's really cool.
So well done.
Because if you think about it, and they talked about this on the commentary, if you think about it, that film has so many phone calls in it.
Mm-hmm.
And to just have static split screen would get boring.
Or even just like, it's a shot of him, now it's a shot of her,
exactly.
A shot of him, but you can hear her voice,
right.
You know, things like that.
For a normal film with a few phone calls in it, that's fine. This literally has dozens of phone calls in it.
Yeah.
So.
You know, on speakerphone or a personal phone or a cell phone, you know. Carphone, all that sort of stuff. Exactly. So
this is also a very well-written or well-edited film, I should say. Just how they piece everything together, even piecing in archived footage of old NFL stuff, and also just laying over the radio announcers' voices, who really sold and set up a lot of different things. It's just kind of, I guess you can really just not pay attention to that and not get it. But I've seen it three times now, and every time I can respect it more and more, the way they edited together all that good footage. They even, like, they had to go get releases. Like, there's footage of a Cleveland fan crying back in 95 when the team had to move. They went and found that fan, had her sign a release so they could put that footage, which is maybe a second, maybe 2 seconds right. long, to get that into the film. And you gotta have a lot of respect for that. That they really had a lot of care with this film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the big thing about it is that it is an NFL commercial, so you have a lot of NFL stuff in there, for good and bad.
But for me, as somebody who's not like already immersed in that world, I don't feel that it was in your face. I mean, right. I sat down knowing I'm about to watch a movie about football and about the draft, so there's gonna be, you know, mention of these players and teams and right. this and that.
There's a lot of subliminal. So if you don't know who the sponsors of the NFL are, you're just like, whatever. But GMC mm-hmm. or GM is a sponsor of the NFL, so they could only use GM cars. So they mm-hmm. can only use Chevys, GMCs,
see, that
stuff
went
like
over
that.
My head.
There's an opening shot, one of the scenes of Papa John's Pizza and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's a commercial film. So it's not very artsy or anything like that, but I think it's a 2 hour runtime, maybe.
Didn't feel like it though.
Hour and a half, 2 hours in between there. I mean, the film rolls right along and it's entertaining mm-hmm. pretty much the whole time. There is also one of the things I saw people get really upset about was, the whole ex-wife dynamic.
Yeah, I didn't really get that until I was like, wait, that's... I almost asked you about it. Like, did I hear that
right?
Well,
people, when people see it, it's like, oh, it's his mom and his sister.
Yeah, I thought it was his sister. And then when she's introduced as, you know, my ex, I was like, what?
It turns out, I found out today, by watching deleted scenes, they actually cut a scene that actually introduced his ex-wife earlier in the film.
Okay.
And it was cut because it was basically, the scene was his mom burning all of his dad's memorabilia at her house. And then, you know, his ex-wife pulls up. He says, why is she here? Well, she's going to have brunch with me. Someone's got to have brunch with me, or I like to have brunch or whatever. You're not going to have brunch with me. So I understand why they cut it, because that's kind of harsh, burning all the memorabilia and stuff. Right. And he doesn't really do anything about it, so I can see why they cut it. But, those are really the only problems I could see. People were complaining about these trades wouldn't happen in real life. And
well, that's something I wanted to ask you. As somebody who has watched the draft before and everything, did you notice anything that, like, technically would not have occurred, or I know that they had to sensationalize it a little bit, which I was also impressed. For anybody who does watch it, I asked, did they like set up and film a draft or whatever? And evidently they did the actual draft, but then added these specific scenes to the real life
draft.
Before
the draft,
they already had the setting in place.
Before the draft started, the commissioner went up and started, you know, did the movie announcements, I guess, the selections, and they got their own little place in Radio City Music Hall to set up and shoot and everything. So and you know, it was a big deal. But the whole about the trades thing, whether would that really happen in real life, it's so hard to tell, because
we don't see the behind the scenes.
Well, okay, I play Madden, video game, whatever. You go onto the forums and they say, well, the game did this, and that wouldn't really happen in real life. Well, just because there's no precedent there for it doesn't mean it's not going to happen, or it can't happen. I mean, everything was in logic. You know, you had a guy who slipped, who wasn't drafted number one, and kept falling and falling and falling. That happened in 2013. with a guy named Geno Smith, who was predicted to maybe go number one overall, and he wasn't picked number one, and he slipped all the way into the second round, 32 picks later, whatever. So, you know, it can happen. The only thing that was a little bit questionable on the trades is the Jacksonville trade. Trading three number twos for a number one pick is kind of out there, but they tried to set it up with the fact that the GM was a rookie. You know, he didn't have a lot of experience.
Right.
Exactly. So I felt that everything was explained well enough, and, you know, they actually had some NFL players in there acting, and they did a fairly good job, and I just really enjoyed it. And maybe it's not a masterpiece as far as, like, artistic value goes, but as far as entertainment
but
value...
But even then, artistically, and looking
at the cinematography,
you're right.
You're right.
It was really well done, and talking rating, you gave it a 4.5. I'm giving it a 4, because it is so well done, and I think if I actually understood the football lingo and jargon, I would have given it a higher rating, but that's just one thing that, no matter how good the film was, if you can't follow it and understand it, you know, it's going to be hard to really enjoy it to the level that, you know, you would want to.
Yeah.
But I loved it in terms of the visual aspect of
it. Yeah, it's a pretty looking film.
Again, that, you know, last third of the film, not even really 100% understanding and knowing what was going on, I found myself like leaning forward, like, ooh, oh, this is going to happen, isn't it? This is so going to happen.
It's like it's like the thing, the bars on the roller coaster go down, and it's like, all right, last third of the film, here we go. And, you know, when you get off, it's like, whew, that was kind of crazy and everything. So, yeah, 4.5 for me, 4 for you. So, on to our next home video release.
So this film takes us on a fabulous adventure as we recount the adventures of hotel concierge Gustav H. in his lovely Grand Budapest Hotel, which is located in the fictional European Republic of Zubrowska. Gustav befriends the new lobby boy named Zero, and together they embark on a journey involving murder, theft, prison, and an escape, and all of this is told through the eyes of an older version of Zero. Dark humor and wonderful filming and visuals, this film is well put together, cinematic delight. Ralph Fiennes of the Harry Potter films plays the role of Gustav perfectly, and newish comer Tony Revolori keeps up quite nicely as Zero. It's a film where the story itself is not the main focus, but rather the visual glory the story allows us to see. I actually give this a 4.5.
I give it a 4.5 too, and I'm going to tell you, this is not a film I really want to see again. But it's okay. This is from Wes Anderson, and
I don't even know who that is.
He basically, this is a Wes Anderson film. It's, if you've seen one, you've seen them all in the sense of
what else
the
has
style.
He done? Is there he's anything done, I may have seen?
He's done Rushmore, Bottle Rocket, The Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, there's a few other ones.
Okay.
But
I haven't seen any of those other ones, but I've seen trailers and stuff, so I'm kind of understanding.
The Fantastic Mr. Fox, the Darjeeling Limited. So basically, he casts the same people in every movie.
Does he?
You got, well, with exceptions, of course. Not every single person is in automatically,
right.
But you've got a lot of. Why am I forgetting his name right now? Bill Murray. There you go. Adrian Brody, Owen Wilson.
There were a ton of big names in this, actually.
Yeah, he's got a lot of friends. You know, Luke Wilson, Jason Schwartzman.
Did you just say Luke Wilson?
Yeah. He wasn't in this film.
Oh, okay.
Right,
that's why I was like, no.
He cast them a lot, too.
Gotcha.
So,
So why is it that you wouldn't want to see this again? Is it
just
because it's something that you've,
I've seen,
quote-unquote, seen before?
It's one of those films I think you see once, and that's fine. I don't think the magic can be recaptured again on a second viewing. It's a very odd film. Let's start with the setting. Like you said, it's fictional Europe. So some people have accents, some don't.
Mm-hmm. And the accents are all a mix, so you've got
right. It's almost
British,
like a parody, but it's like a very vague parody of
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
You know, of European films, of Americanized European films, of, you know, and there's just these crazy characters who have these great personalities, like the person Ralph Fiennes plays, Gustav. He's
flamboyant.
You want to know more about him every time.
A lovely degree.
Yeah.
It's not over the top where you're like,
well,
he is gay?
Over the top. Well, he is over the top, but that's the point. Is
but
you
I don't feel
know
like
more.
It's in your face. Like, it's done so well.
It's done in a... It's a very British-style comedy where everybody talks really fast and, you know, they have a way about them. It's hard to explain, but if you've seen Wes Anderson, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And like you said, there's a lot of people that are recognizable in this cast. There's Willem Dafoe. He doesn't say much. He plays basically kind of the muscle for Adrian Brody, who is trying to frame the butler of his mother who gets murdered, and you know, so he can get the estate. Turns out that the mother left the estate to Gustav, who is a I don't even know what you would call him. So you've got cougars for...
Yeah, he's a playboy of the older women.
Yeah, exactly. He likes them very old, like 80, 90 years old.
Yeah, he makes a comment in the train to Zero that she was fabulous in bed, and Zero's like, she was 85. He goes, I've had older.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
So, and then you've got...
There's Jeff Goldblum, there's Harvey Keitel, Jude Law, Edward Norton...
Right.
Jason Schwartzman, Tilda Swinton, excuse me, played the
old lady.
The old lady, yeah. Which I didn't even know until after the fact when I was looking at IMDb. I was like, she olds up well.
Right, exactly.
So it was impressive for me. But yeah, amazingly versatile cast here and lots of big names. But
The film starts out and you don't really know where it's going at all. Like, I watched the
trailer. I had no idea what this film was about, right. So I was like,
I watched the trailer and I still didn't know what it was about. and even then, I watched the trailer now and I kind of still don't know what it's about, in the sense of the trailer, there's so much to this that it's just hard to tell someone in a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't even think we're going to really explain the plot all that much, but... you know, the visual style of this is,
it's like a
gingerbread house
tone.
Display.
Yeah,
it's like,
but I mean,
everything looks like it's a miniature model of something that's shot. You know what I mean? Like the hotel itself, or the lift, or.
See, and one thing that I said to you is, in terms of like color and everything. Again, having not seen any of the other Wes Anderson films that you mentioned, when I saw this, it had a very Edward Scissorhands feel for me in terms of...
A lot of pastels and stuff
Yeah,
like that.
The pastels mixed with the, like, the blacks and whites of, like, the dark, shadowy sort of stuff. And
it was, you know, it's
you know,
kind of
muted
cartoonized.
With the pops of color.
Right, you go to the jail and they're wearing the prison uniforms.
Yeah, the black and white striped
stuff. Big black and white stripes.
But then, hello, here's a bright pink cake box from a pastry shop.
Right,
and it's
exactly.
Like, you know, kind of out of place.
It's obvious that he likes to play around with color and stuff like that.
But I enjoyed that. Like, it was kind
of
refreshing.
It was refreshing, yeah. There you go. Kind of like you, with that, Farkle laugh.
Farkle laugh. Girl Meets World reference.
Which we'll probably review that at the end of the season, too. But back to this film. I can't recommend it to everybody because... I didn't even really want to like it, just because I don't like that kind of humor, but it's done really well. And I think what helps the humor are the shots, the camera shots, because they don't stay static for very long.
Yeah. It's
so in the train scene when they're getting arrested or, you know, they're roughing them up, which is, that scene can go one of two ways. It can go overly funny or, you know, trying to be overly funny, or it can be overly violent and stuff like that. But it is a violent scene, but the camera shots that they do when they get a close-up of Gustav looking at Zero, and then Zero looking at Gustav, and there's, like, panic in their eyes, and it's almost like they're two lovers looking at each other like, will I ever see you again? You know what I mean? They're almost afraid for their lives. And, you know, everyone who's cast is cast pretty well. They play their roles fine. Adrian Brody was quite over the top. He is one of those people that I don't like to see on film. I think he has a distracting face. He's like, I don't know.
What is it about it?
I think it's his nose.
So then you should watch him as Voldemort.
No, he's not Voldemort.
Oh, wait, who did you just say?
Adrian Brody.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying...
No.
Oh,
Fiennes is fine. And his brother... why am I forgetting his name?
Who are we talking about right now?
Ralph Fiennes.
Joseph.
There you go. Joseph Fiennes.
Hercules. Oh, okay. Visually, I like mix the two of them up a lot.
Yeah.
Because they look so similar. But I'm sorry. Brody, go.
No, yeah, he just has a distracting. But I mean, he like, and there's a debate on whether a certain homophobic slur should be allowed to be said in films and stuff like that. And he says it a couple times early on in the film.
See, that like that word to me is so ridiculous that it's even considered. Because if you actually look up the dictionary definition.
Well, yeah.
It's a cigarette
but I mean,
a bundle
I think,
of sticks.
I think the gay community is actually very sensitive about that word just because of the vim and vigor that's used when it's said.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, not to open up a floodgate of debate here, but I mean, you could start using any word as, you know, a slur. Like, you could say. From now on, pillow is, you know, a derogatory term for white people.
But, I mean...
So, like, I don't know, it's just,
yeah,
it's weird to me that...
It would take years and years and a lot of hatred in that to get
pillow.
It to that level. But there was a film that someone went back and watched. It was a website, and they were doing... I forget what film it was. It was some sort of film that it was a cult classic and everything, but, you know, it hadn't really been talked about in a while, so they're like, we're going to go back and see if this is really as good as it was. And they're like, yes, it is as good as it was, even though it uses slurs that really aren't funny these days and stuff like that. So they were funny, but now they're not funny, you know.
How are racial slurs ever funny?
I don't know. Well... This isn't necessarily a racial slur, but it's
a
homophobic slur. But, you know, if you're offended by that sort of thing, understand that this film does not give an F about that. And, you know, it's not going to compromise what it thinks is funny. And even then, it's kind of portraying this word in a different light in the sense of this person is a sick person who is... You know, I guess morally bankrupt to use a term again. So it's not necessarily like cool to say it in this film or anything. But I just wanted to throw that out there. So yeah, 4.5 for me. I think it is oddly funny. I think it's oddly interesting, even though I think it may lull in the middle of the film as it's trying to set up and trying to go. It does kind of time jump a little bit in there. Like, Gustav is in jail, and then Zero's talking about how him and, you know, the girlie, I forget her name, get married, and it shows Gustav marrying them, and obviously he's still in jail, but at that point, you just think he's out of jail, because they haven't really specified anything. You're looking at me weird.
Yeah, because I was just reading a thing on IMDb, so I don't understand. Like, why are you talking about him having been in jail? They escaped. He didn't go back.
So he's in jail, right?
Then they bust out.
But not right away.
No, they've been in there for a little while, then they bust out, and then he
but
meets
in
back
between,
up with Zero.
In between, Zero talks about, is telling this guy, present, in the present, about how him and, what's her name? I forget names really easily. Birthmark on her face.
I'm
get married.
Blank as well. They get married at the end.
No. No. He's talking about how Gustav married them. And it shows in montage clips him marrying them and everything like that. Gustav is still in jail at this point.
No.
Yes.
No, because it's towards the end of the film when it's showing that they got married, because then he mentions that I lost her and our child 2 years later to this illness, which can be cured in a week.
You're wrong.
Go watch it again.
I will.
I will bet you money that I'm not wrong. What are we betting?
I don't know. We're betting, we're betting viewer's choice for the loser to review a film. So.
Okay. So you know
you're absolutely wrong, or else I wouldn't have even thought of this. Because he's in jail, and then the next moment, you know, something else happens over here, and then he starts talking about how, you know, they were getting married and everything like that, and he married them, or he's meeting her and everything like that, and he's flirting with her and so on and so forth. And then it leads, and then he marries them, and stuff like that. He's still in jail at this point, but it doesn't specify if they broke out yet. And then you see him in jail again, breaking out. Yes, because at this point, I thought, listen, at this point, okay, so they're in jail, right?
Yes.
And they're all sitting down at the table.
Yes.
And they're talking about breaking out.
Yes.
And then the next thing that happens is this montage thing where Gustav is in his purple suit in the hotel, meeting her, blah, 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 getting married, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, okay, is he out of prison now? Did they just skip a whole bunch? And then I'm like, well, maybe their little table meeting was that Gustav is going to sneak them in the tools because he's a part of them. And if he doesn't, they'll kill him or whatever. And then it goes to that, and they start breaking. I said, okay, well, there's all the guys. And then it's like, oh, there's Gustav again. So he's still in jail.
They're in jail. They're discussing a way that they can get tools in to dig. Mm-hmm. And then it flashes to him meeting her because she works in a bakery.
What?
And how she is their in. And he meets her and is giving his approval and says that he wants to be the one to marry them.
Right.
And then they're back in prison. She's provided them with the tools embedded in cookies. They are breaking out, blah, 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 blah. It's at the end of the film that we see them being married because I'm serious. He mentions, I lost her and our child 2 years later to this whatever illness, which can now be cured in a week with
maybe
their medication.
Maybe that. But I swear, it shows them marrying him earlier in the film. So, anyway.
So, I'm winning this bet.
No.
Yep.
You're wrong.
No.
You're absolutely wrong. Anyway.
So you liked it, but don't really recommend it.
No, I recommend it, but you got to understand, Wes Anderson is an eclectic director, and I advise you to at least have seen one of his other films to figure out if you like it. And even then, I didn't really like The Royal Tenenbaums, but I like this film. I really like Rushmore. So I guess it just kind of depends. I think it kind of depends on the fact that this is a focused comedy in the sense of it really focuses on Ralph Fiennes' character and the other actor who plays Zero. It really focuses on them as a comedy duo. Rushmore focuses on Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray as a comedy duo. So I think those two are the same in that sense. It's just that the Grand Budapest Hotel, from a setting standpoint, is 100% more eclectic than Rushmore, which is taking place at a school. So, I recommend it, though. I think it's pretty darn good. It'll be in that final mix come the end of the year when we talk about our best. And it does seem like we're giving a lot of high ratings lately, like at least on this show. Mm-hmm. I've given two 4.5s already this show. And we still got
still
too many.
Two films to go.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, am I being too easy? Am I being.
I just think that we're getting really good. I mean, you know, summer is always supposed to be these blockbuster movies and everything, and it's been kind of lackluster in the blockbuster film department. So
be.
I think it's just that we've been underwhelmed with all of these films, and then now we're finally getting to, like, the good meatiness of, you know, 2014 film.
Yeah, I guess so. We're seeing...
It's my take on it. Anyway.
Yeah, we're seeing less films that are less worried about making money and being consumer-friendly and
More about just telling the story.
Yeah, exactly. So, even though this was made earlier this year. So. But we are going to take a break now. We're going to turn on the AC for a bit because it is hotter than balls on a chalkboard in here.
Do you need some cornstarch?
We're going to turn on the AC and cool off for a bit. And then we're going to come back with our theatrical reviews of As Above, So Below and
The 100-Foot Journey.
Exactly. So stay tuned. We want to thank you for listening to the Lex Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/MarriedReviews or on Instagram at instagram.com/MarriedReviews. Also, if you have any questions, comments, anything like that, you can get a hold of us at lexmarston@gmail.com, lexmarston@gmail.com. Enjoy the rest of the show. One of my biggest phobias is claustrophobia, which is a fear of being confined to a small, enclosed area. Our next film plays heavily on that. In As Above, So Below, we venture down into the catacombs of Paris in search of the Philosopher's Stone, an ancient stone rumored to hold tremendous powers unlike any other. Things turn sour quickly when we learn that the catacombs are much more than just a tourist attraction, but instead the gates of hell themselves. As Above, So Below does a good job with the found footage model, making claustrophobic moments much more effective than the conventional camera angle would have, but the film fails when trying to touch on the creepier aspects of what hell might actually be like. There are a few good ideas in As Above, So Below, but nothing that quite hits the mark. 3 out of 5 for me, which is still decent. It's a decent film. It's decent horror fodder. Decent as we start to get into October coming so soon, where I binge on horror films. This is actually, I'd say this is as much a Tomb Raider-esque, The Mummy, what have you film as it is a horror film.
And that's kind of what I liked about it, is that it does take kind of the adventure side of it, kind of, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, Tomb Raider,
right,
that sort of thing, where there's a treasure yeah, aspect to it as well.
Right.
And, you know, the Philosopher's Stone is a stone that is rumored to...
Isn't that
to,
from Harry Potter or something?
It is from the first Harry Potter.
There you
Potter,
go.
But it's a stone that's rumored to be able to turn any substance into gold and also to give the possessor of the stone eternal life. So,
yeah,
it's kind
not
of
to
a big
get,
deal.
Not to get too sidetracked here, but... So the it's Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone in Europe?
Yeah, they switched it to the Sorcerer's Stone here in the U.S. because for some reason Americans wouldn't understand what a philosopher is.
Gotcha.
Which okay, is just like baffling to me because whatever.
Okay. Just wanted to clear that up.
It is funny though because I do have the American version of the Harry Potter series, but I also have the first book of the UK series, so it is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
There's nothing different inside, right? Besides it saying
instead of
sorcerer
right, it says philosopher, right, but everything else is the same.
Okay.
But it's got different cover art and right, all of that. But yeah, so that's kind of fun to read that version instead.
Gotcha.
Okay. Anywho.
Yeah, so I mean, all the what I liked about this film, and I discussed this with you already, I guess, is that each person going down into the catacombs actually had like a real reason to go down there, whereas it's like, okay, let's use Friday the 13th as an example. So Friday the 13th takes place in you know, like a campground, so usually you have six or eight teenagers going, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's reason for going is just because,
mm-hmm,
you know, this has a reason. The main chick wants the Philosopher's Stone. It's something her father has been searching for. Her father basically killed himself over because it was just such a...
an elusive thing.
Right. And, you know, drove him mad doing it. So she wants to get that because her father couldn't get to it. She thinks she can and get that for him, basically. She has a cameraman, so obviously he's going down there,
mm-hmm,
even though he has some reservations. There's her ex-boyfriend, who is basically an ex-boyfriend because she left him in Turkey in jail.
He ended up in jail, yeah.
So he's kind of like, he knows how crazy this lady is for this thing and doesn't want to go down there in the first
place. But his reason for going is because he can read and speak Aramaic, which is an ancient language that a lot of the clues, if you will, are written in.
Which
so she needs his skill because she herself does not
speak. She can speak several languages, but not
that
this
one.
Ancient language. Then they need a tour guide to go down to the catacombs because they don't really know the area.
Well,
and
because
it's such
what
a labyrinth that
is she has this theory that there's a chamber that exists in this part of the city, and
secret
because
chamber.
The catacombs, you know, go all over, if they could find a way.
Chamber of Secrets, even.
Ooh.
See how I did that there? I connected it back to Harry Potter. Anyway, go ahead.
That was like a nerdy delight right there. But she kind of realizes that they can use the catacombs, and if they can somehow tunnel from point A over to point B, then they'll be into this chamber where she thinks that the stone is. So they need somebody who knows the catacombs really well. Mm. So they are pointed in the direction of papillon, which is French for butterfly, which is what's strange.
Okay.
They call him Pap or Pappy, but still, like, that was kind of weird, because I'm like, butterfly? Really?
Well, I was reading, like, the cast before I went and saw this, and I didn't read it in a French accent, so it was like
Papillon?
Papillion or something like that. Anyway, it was, so he has two other people with him as his team, a girl.
Suxy and Zed.
Suxy is a very interesting name. So, you know, they all have a purpose for being down there for one point or another. There's the main chick who's trying to find it. She's got her cameraman, her translator, her tour guide, and her tour guide has two helpers. So, I mean, and it's such a small thing to think about, but when you do think about it, it adds depth to the story. And I thought it did add depth to when they started getting down further. You know, when they started facing the creepy things. Well, all of a sudden, this team finds this guy that was on their team before, but he disappeared in the catacombs.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not like himself, or like he was. And so they're like, well, what's going on with this dude? And he was creepy. And then, you know, it's... I'd say the actual storyline with the stone was pretty interesting. I didn't feel like it took full advantage of that, though. I felt like it kind of was like, oh, wait, we have to be a scary movie, so let's do all this over here first. Like, let's get this woman walking in the background with a baby, and, you know, it's just like, let's do this jump scare right here. And that brought the film down for me.
I actually had people in my theater that screamed a couple of times.
Right, and there will be with jump scares. Some people are very... like hair trigger with jump scares. Like, so some people cannot watch horror films because a lot of them are filled with jump scares and it, like, you know, jumps their heart and they're like, oh my god. When you've seen so many of them like I have, it's like you just brace yourself for it because it can happen at any time, especially the times you know it's gonna happen, when there's something right around the corner, or you know you saw the girl walking in the background, so you know it's only a matter of time before there's a jump scare. You know, so
it still doesn't stop me from actually physically, like, jumping, though.
Right. So, I get it. But that's probably more of a sound trigger than anything. A loud sound, like...
It actually makes me wonder, like, I'd be curious just as kind of a scientific experiment to take, like, a scary film and watch it on mute just to see if... Because music is such a big part
of,
you know, scary films.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
I remember as a kid watching horror films. I was interested in horror films, but I would get scared easily, so I'd watch it on mute, and it would help me
and then
actually
it's like, okay, that's lame.
it actually helped me get past the, you know, the part I was scared about, because music is a huge thing, you know, as we've seen. That's like a running theme with a lot of the reviews we've done.
The
some
score.
Films have really been brought down because of the score, that like
cheesy,
when the game stands tall,
over the top.
You know. Yeah, exactly. With this film, I thought the score was okay. funny enough, the creepiest score, quote unquote, in the film is when the guy's talking about the piano he had as a kid. And he was like, oh, this key was broke, so he's doing the tune, and then bump, 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 which you see in the trailer. Mm-hmm. So if you've seen the trailer, you know what I'm talking about. I like those moments. Like, those moments were interesting in the sense of, oh, this is going to be pretty creepy. But they never really fully explored that. There's and everybody probably knows it, there's a miniseries called It, Stephen King's It, where they do that. This It preys on the, I guess, fears and the guilt of these...
The clown.
Yeah, of these kids turned adults and everything like that, and that's fully explored. This...
Being a miniseries, they have the time to do that.
Well, I mean, it was a book first, and then...
But I'm just saying, with a miniseries, when you know that you have 7 hours
it's like,
to
fill... Well, I think this was like 3.5 or 4 hours long.
Even still, that's twice the length of...
Right,
know,
exactly.
Three times the length of an average film at 90 minutes.
Right, so I think this film needed to be longer, but I also feel that if it was longer, I probably wouldn't have kept my interest.
I think, though, that it could have afforded another 15-20 minutes to, you know, kind of further tie some things together.
I think the big problem with that, though, is that we're in the same setting for so long.
But, okay, so each person has this thing that the...
The thing in their past or something they're really afraid of.
Of these six people, Scarlett, the main girl, George, her translator, Benji, her cameraman...
You're really good with remembering names.
Pappy, the guide.
Yeah.
And then his two people, Sooksie and Zed. Of these six people, it only explores the backstory of four of them, and even then, not fully.
Yeah, not fully at all.
It goes fully into Scarlett's and George's. We get a little glimpse of Poppy's situation with the burning car, the accident there. Zed makes a comment that he has a child that he knows about, but that he denies the existence of. We know nothing about Benji's story or Sooksie's story about, you know, she dies pretty early on.
Right.
And then...
In a pretty vicious...
Yeah, manner. In a bad way. And then Benji's death, I feel like the woman and the crying baby, there has to be something there. Uh-huh. Like, there's speculation on IMDb, like... Does he also have a child that he, you know, has ignored? Did he, like, rape someone, and that's what that woman in the background represents? Like, what is his story?
Yeah.
So I feel like they could have gone a little bit more into...
Maybe I'll give it the benefit of the doubt by saying there was a deleted scene or something like that. I don't know for sure. But to me, it did just seem like a generic The Ring girl. You know what I mean? Girl in a white gown that's...
But there's also... Because when they are directed to this club where they can find Poppy for their guide, there's this woman that kind of, like, gives the big bug eyes and looks at him. And then when they're in the catacombs and we hear this chanting and the camera looks over and you see that same girl making eye contact
more stuff
with Benji...
That's not explained.
That's what, like, for me, like, what does she have to do with him?
I mean, you can try to make that connection. But also understand that Benji is the main camera guy. So what we see through his eyes isn't necessarily always directed at him as a reference to him alone.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, you know, obviously that creepy-eyed looking woman has to play some sort of part in some sort of part of the story,
yet
they never go anywhere.
I think it's just a matter of maybe she is the conduit for the gates of hell, so she goes and roams above ground. She hears them talking about needing to go in the catacombs, so she goes back and, I don't know, preps, because there's all those people. And
a little coven.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know exactly. It's not explained. And so you have to make up your own stuff with it, and I guess I don't have the brain juice to make up a good enough story to make up for that, so.
I feel like this film, while it was cliched in some aspects, it's not something that you... I couldn't totally predict everything, so I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised by it. I admittedly had to watch this film knowing that when I left the theater, I would be entering daylight, because... It's weird. I enjoy horror films, and I enjoy that little adrenaline rush you get when, you know, you're on the edge of your seat, you don't know what's going to happen. But I think for me, I can enjoy the horror films when it's pure fantasy. This I enjoyed because I know that that's not real. I can watch, you know, the Freddy Krueger stuff and Friday the 13th stuff and be okay with it because I know it's not reality. Whereas things like The Purge and the Saw franchise, like, that freaks me out a lot more because I feel like that has the potential to be reality. So I don't like those sorts of horror films as much as, like, the ones that are purely fictional, 100% without a doubt. Gotcha. So, you know, I enjoyed this. It's kind of a mixture because, like, the catacombs are real. They do exist. Yeah. So I'm sure that that's, like, a pretty creepy-ass place to go. I mean,
let's
and
just
be.
Say you wouldn't go down there after watching this film.
Probably not. I mean, maybe that guided tour. If, again, I knew that I'm going down there at, you know, 11 a.m. and coming out at 12:30, so I have, you know, 9 hours of daylight to take my
Did
mind off of it.
Did they actually film in the catacombs, or they build a set?
I believe that the tour part was actually the catacombs, but then, of course, you know, all that part where they're, like, climbing over bone and
all
that.
Yeah, obviously they're not going to defile the catacombs to film this video, or this movie. So, yeah, 3 out of 5 for me. It's... I don't know. I give it a light recommendation. It's, again, one of those things where maybe Netflix on Halloween or right around Halloween if you need something to watch.
But not Home Alone at night.
Yeah, because of the psychology involved in it, I'd say that not alone would be nice. Just because
it is a mine.
Yeah.
Fudge. I don't want
well,
to say
we'll
that
call
word.
It, instead of that, just call it a mind juggler or something like that. I think that sounds nice.
I agree with your rating, though. And, you know, as we've said many times, this whole subscription thing is causing us to go see films that we might not necessarily see.
Yeah, let me clarify
but
by
I
saying this.
I personally would not have gone to see this.
I don't regret seeing this film.
I don't regret seeing it either, and that's what I love about this whole thing, is that I am able to see film, see everything, and I come out of some things actually, you know, happy with having seen it when I walked into it grumbling. But this isn't one that I would have been, you know, intrigued by seeing prior to this. I wouldn't have, you know, gone on my own accord to see it because it's not necessarily in my wheelhouse of, you know, favorites. But, you know, it was enjoyable. And
there's only two films that I've walked out of the theater kind of, and even this is just a little bit regarding, because I enjoy the experience. I like knowing that I don't like that film now. You know what I mean?
Neighbors and Sex Tape.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, those are the infamous ones on the show now. Everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say the two worst films of the year so far.
So, what are you referring to when you're starting to make this comment?
I'm saying, like you were saying about kind of regretting seeing films, certain films. Like, I don't know, even with the bad films, I don't really regret seeing them. Because it's that experience of, okay, well, I saw it, and now I know for sure whether I like it or not. But at the same time, it's not so miserable, and I'm not so miserable that a bad movie is going to ruin my whole day or whatever. Like, I was pretty upset with Neighbors just because I found most of the humor offensive. And don't get me wrong, there are harsh films that do offensive humor right. There's a lot of the Kevin Smith films I enjoy, which are very harsh humor, you know, very dirty stuff. But it all seems to have a point and a certain intelligence to it, like a nod and a wink, not just some stoner writing it in his room because, you know, that's what's funny at that second.
Gotcha.
So, I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there that I like going to the movies in the sense of seeing movies. I don't like going to the movies because of people there, because, good Lord, the people just annoy the crap out of me. Week after week, there's someone new. There's someone every time. There's someone yapping. Like, he was standing up. I walk into the theater getting ready to sit down and get ready for the show, and he's standing up in the middle of the theater, turned around and talking to a couple behind him, and then he proceeds to talk to them throughout the trailers. Did you guys see this one? Oh, I want to see this one. Did you guys want to see this one? And it's like, dude, I understand that you probably are very social. You probably don't have a lot of close friends. I wonder why. But this is a movie theater. And nobody cares that it's your sixth movie of the day or anything like that, which is impossible.
Yeah, you know? At our theater, that's not possible.
At that point in time, he would only have been able to see one other film, and it was the classic film that they were showing that day. So it was, I don't know. To me, people get on my nerves, as you could tell. In that sense, I'm a very miserable person. But as far as movies go, I like it. I like experiencing new movies, and I like saying, "Oh, I have a new least favorite movie now," you know, or something right. like that.
And I do have to just comment because most of the listeners on here are people who you've never met in reality,
right?
So I have some coworkers who have met you, and they have listened to this podcast, and they've been like, "That's really your husband? Really?" Because every time I've met him, he's like quiet, one word. Hey, how's it going?
Well, yeah. If I don't know you,
and then like literally on air, if you will, you turn into this whole new person. Which for me, it's I live with you. I know you. This is you. Although you do have your persona to a degree, you have your radio voice.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I think so. But it's just kind of funny because people are like, I like listening to it because it's like, I kind of get a feel of who he is as opposed to like in person because it's like head nod. That's about the extent that some people get from you.
Right, exactly. So. And understand that generally I don't like a lot of people. Like, and I know that sounds really bad, but I'd rather be honest. And it's not that I don't like them personally, but like people have tics or things or personality traits that I don't like generally, and so you have personality traits that I don't like, but it's not to the point where
gasp.
Exactly.
Like what? But
well, like perfect example, we're watching
the
draft
movie?
Yeah, draft day. I don't mind you asking like the questions technical. To further your knowledge about the plot or actual thing, but you ask questions like, basically, and I'm going to be very Go blunt with it. This. So how does a movie end? That's basically what you're saying. It's like, or you'll predict something. Am I right? Well, I'm not going to tell you. We might as well just shut the movie off and I'll tell you what it's about. Watch the movie. Experience
it. And after watching this, I even commented that I was like, oh my god. I'm just like Dexter, because this is what he does, and it drives me insane.
Our son, Dexter. Yeah.
And then I felt bad. Because Dexter and I will sit down, and he'll start an episode of My Little Ponies, and he's like, why are they ponies? I don't freaking know! This is your show! You've watched it
Very
12 times.
Yes.
I have never seen this episode, so I have no clue what's going on. Why are you asking me? And then 2 minutes later, what's her name? I don't know, they just said it. If you stop talking, we'll find out.
Right.
So I feel really bad. I was like, oh my god, I'm him. So my apologies for that.
But get to the point, like I don't know any of your coworkers personally, except for maybe one. Maybe. And that's not even that personal. So basically you have one coworker that I've talked to maybe more than twice. And it's like, or maybe a few. Maybe two. Or something like that. So, and I like them. They're nice people and everything like that. So, but, for the most part, I'm not going to get into a big conversation. I don't like small talk. I'm very bad at small talk, too.
Lovely weather we're
like
having.
And I know we're deviating from the reviews, but I guess you get to know us a little bit more here. Like, we had a solar guy come this past week, and I was just dreading it the whole time because... One, someone's coming into my house, and I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
And people, this is great, because up until recently, I have always been the one to deal with calling and making appointments or setting things up or taking
right.
time off work to go do things.
Because I have a social... Not, I wouldn't say it's quite agoraphobia, but it's like I have...
You get anxiety.
I get anxiety when it comes to talking to people I don't know. But if it's someone I know, like someone I've known for a long time, it's not a problem. But if it's someone that's like, I'm going to come into your house, even though we've never met before. Yeah, sure, come on in. I'm not that type of person, even though I act like that when he comes to the door. But, you know, I say, come on in. And, you know, he goes through his whole spiel and everything like that. And, you know, it's time to make small talk after we're done. And it's just like, I'm kind of like...
You got the dude's life story, basically.
Well, yeah, but that's some people's personality. They just like to... They're a lot more open than I am about everything. You know, it's just... I'm to the point where, okay, leave so I can enjoy the rest of my day before I have to go pick up my son from school. And, you know, it's not like... I understand he's, like, out and about and everything. That's his job. So to get any small talk he can in there, it's fine, fun and fine. But it's just like, get out of the house. Go on. Wrap yourself. That meeting took an hour, you know. And I was expecting it to take maybe 15 minutes. But, you know, he had a whole... I didn't understand that he was going to have a whole presentation, a PowerPoint presentation.
Did he on his
Yeah, he brought a laptop in with him. PowerPoint presentation. We signed papers. He brought this little scanner with him that it's just like a bar.
And he scanned our documents?
Like a Toblerone or something like that. And he just... You know.
Oh, I want one.
And it saves the scan inside, and then you hook it up to a computer.
Get me one.
Anyway, enough of that. But yeah, so hi to all the coworkers out there listening. Back to our reviews here in our next film. You are going to introduce, so take it away.
I am. So, a family of foodies leave India after a tragedy takes a family member as well as the family restaurant. The Kadam family find their brakes failing them in a quaint French village and decide to stay and open up a family restaurant and bring their Indian palate to the French. However, in opening their restaurant across the street from Madame Mallory's Michelin star-rated locale, a floodgate is open that begins as food rivalry, but escalates into something a little more hateful. This causes both sides of the street to come together and become friend rather than foe. This film has a lot of heart and some really wonderful performances by Helen Mirren as Madame Mallory and Manish Dayal, I'm probably butchering that,
yeah,
probably. As the main character of the... Drawing a blank on his name, go figure.
Hassan,
thank you. But this actually is my favorite film of the year. And I give it a 4.5 out of 5. And the reason I'm not giving it a full 5 is because there were a couple of little things that I think it lacked to really take it to that step, that level.
You want to know what the worst part of this film is? What the weakest part of the film is?
The score.
The title.
Oh, the title. But they even make reference to it that literally the two restaurants are 100 feet from each other. They're across the street, and his brother even said, it's 100 foot. You know, I even counted it myself. So
I get it, but...
Yeah, it what would you have called it?
I was actually...
Having seen the film, what would you
have
titled
it? Well, let me
tell
you a little story, a little short story.
Give me the story.
I was in the theater, and I was going to do a doubleheader with As Above, So Below and this being second. So I said, can I get a ticket for As Above, So Below at 2 o'clock? And then the 100, the 100-foot journey at 5, I forgot what the title was of the movie was for like a good, literally, like 15, 20 seconds, forgot. And I was just standing there, and, like, you could tell them...
You know that they have a little sheet with all the movie titles.
And... No, I did not.
Yeah. But
anyway, the employee behind the counter was just kind of getting perturbed, I could tell. And I was just like, I can't remember what the goddamn name of the film was. But luckily, I did remember it. It's just... One, it's a mouthful. Two, it's kind of hard to remember, obviously. And three, it's... Like you said, it makes sense... But it's such a little thing in there. It's like...
But it's really not because while the restaurants themselves are 100 feet from each other, it's also, you know, there's that saying that every journey begins with one small step.
Yeah, I know.
So, like, he literally makes a big journey, those 100 feet, to be able to train as a chef in her restaurant. He ends up bringing their one Michelin star restaurant...
Right.
After he is there for a year, it becomes a 2-star restaurant. And then he goes to work in Paris, and he's like this, you know, amazing chef that everybody wants to work with and everything. And So, like, it literally is about his 100-foot journey.
Right. And this is a 2-hour film. I mean, you just basically said the 2-hour film in, you know, 30 seconds or whatever.
And so, good night, folks.
And so it's... It did seem to drag a little bit. Drag on a little bit, I guess, for me. And again, I'm a person that doesn't like... I like to go to the movies, but I don't like to sit there for 3 hours unless I know it's going to be really worth it. This was worth sitting there for 2 hours, but it still kind of seemed to drag. And it hit a slow point. I really liked Hassan, the actor. I think he's a good-looking kid, and I think that he was able to hold that role fairly well, especially going to Paris and... that's where he goes, Paris, right?
That's where he ends up as the head chef, yes.
Going to Paris, I think he still fit in there, you know? It wasn't like he looked the same when he got to the French village as he did when he was in Paris. They changed up his look to make him look, I don't even know what to say.
A little more, like, you
modern, can, I guess?
Not just that, but I mean, like, in Paris, he's got, like, the more scruffy look, and right. He's got, like, the older 5 o'clock shadow of the beard, and you can just tell that he's, like, not really enjoying himself anymore.
Yeah. So, the highlight of the film, the best thing, I said the weakest thing was the title for me. The best thing of the film was the father, who basically is all the character in this film. He brings all the humor, pretty much. Everybody's kind of, this is a word you like to use, hoity-toity. But except for him and his family. And so, he's like, you know, the forefront of, even with Hassan, the father is the forefront of the family, at the forefront. So he's speaking for the family all the time, and... he's haggling for the family all the time, even though they don't want him. They're embarrassed because it's not
like you don't ask Mumbai for a discount anymore. At the hotel.
Yeah,
exactly. Like so, in Papa is played by Om Puri, who's an Indian actor who's been in a lot of Indian films. Mm-hmm. He was in Gandhi. Don't know what role he played.
I don't think anybody would really recognize him unless you watched a lot of
this. Says that he's, according to IMDb, this says that he's been an actor in 256 things. So that's a pretty impressive resume for any actor.
Absolutely. Helen Mirren does a French accent this time around.
Yeah, she's like, this is going to be a bad pun, but she's like the queen of,
they actually made reference.
I know, it was funny, because I believe it's in the trailer, something about you sit up in your room like a queen.
And it's funny, because they actually pause on her for like 3 seconds after he says that.
Yeah, she was kind of like...
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cheesy, but also at the same time, it was funny, and it didn't really seem... I didn't laugh, but it didn't really seem like anybody else caught on.
Were there points in the film where you actually did chuckle or laugh out loud?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I, like... boisterously laughed at any part of the film, but I got some good chuckles out of it. And again, I laughed more at this film than I did at most comedies we've seen so far this year. There's something
which I think
about,
that this is like labeled as a drama, so that says
dramedy,
something.
Maybe. I don't know.
Don't you hate that word because it combines two words?
But it's, I mean...
Or is it because now that it's more mainstream, it's acceptable?
I don't know. But trying to label it as one thing in particular, I don't know, it's tough. But there's a lot of subtle humor in this film, and I like subtle humor. I don't particularly like humor that's like, ah, I just made a joke, laugh, you know, or physical humor all the time. And it's got to be done really, really well and with some taste. This, I mean, the father, he is funny. Like, my favorite show of all time is King of the Hill. And the reason why is because it's not in-your-face, ha-ha funny. It's, they set up these characters, and these characters all have these traits, and their traits are funny. They're hilarious. And the father's traits are hilarious, especially when how cheap he is, you know?
And I love because he makes the comment when they are checking out this abandoned restaurant, And Madame Mallory comes over and she's like, excuse me, but you're trespassing. And I believe this was in the trailer as well. Well, do you own this property? Oh, no. Well, then you're trespassing too.
Right.
And, you know, so that was just the way he said it. He's, is like, yeah, you know, calling you out. And she just kind of shrugs it off. And then she's like, well, I overheard that you asked for a discount at the hotel. And then Hassan is like, what? Why did you do that? Blah, blah, blah. And he informs her, just because I ask for a discount doesn't mean that I'm cheap. It means that I'm, you know, like, wise with
my
money.
Doesn't mean I'm poor.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm poor. There we go.
He's very combative. Like, so, he's not going to just back down from this lady. And, you know, he's funny while he's doing it. Like, they're discussing the terms for Hassan to go over to her restaurant to cook. The wage discussion. And he said, the Hassan finally breaks in and says, I'll do it for, you know, this much.
Because she says 200 a week. And he's like, oh no, 600. And she's like, right, no, I'll do, you know, 250.
And
he's like, four and 350. And then he jumps in, deal. And then his dad looks at him like, what are you doing?
And she just says, you spoil the fun of the game. You know, so it's funny in that sense. The girl name,
Marguerite.
She is weird looking, but weird looking in the sense of, I totally bought that she's French, you know.
So you are saying the French look weird?
Yeah, they do have a distinct look. I mean, she's got like a very small face, you know what I mean? But she was a bitch in this.
See, and that's one thing, that's one of the things that kind of took my score down a little bit, is because at first I'm like, what is going on? And then it's like, okay, well, she's, you know, they're rivals, restaurants cross from each other. And then especially when he tells her that he made an omelet and now he's going to work in the kitchen, she's like pissed off.
Well, there's a scene actually, and I think a lot of people, I could actually hear the disapproval in the audience of this, where they're kind of arguing about the whole situation. And in the previous scene, he burns his hands on a pot of hot water trying to put out this fire that...
There's a fire started. He's on fire. He puts his body's on fire. He puts his hands in the pot to put the fire out.
No. What happens is...
And he goes to lift up the pot but can't because his hands are burned.
That's not the way I saw it. The way I saw it is everything's on fire. There's
because
a bucket of water.
His leg is on fire, and his dad is trying to get that, and his brother comes running with the fire extinguisher.
Because I saw it as the water in the bucket was heated by the fire. He tried to grab the bucket and burn his hands.
No, like his whole body is on fire. Huh. He puts his hands in the water to put that out. His leg is still on fire. His dad's trying to put it out.
I totally
He tries to lift up the pot of water to dump on the fire, but can't because his hands are so badly mangled.
I guess I missed something. Anyway, so they're kind of arguing in her apartment building, and like he tries to calm her down by putting his wrapped up hands on her face, and like she grabs his hand first, like lovingly or whatever, and then she squeezes the hand to have him let go of her, even though he doesn't really like have her. But you know,
basically,
so that
he's trying to do a sweet thing, and he's trying to put his hand on either side of her face as if he's about to kiss her, and she like reaches up to also touch his hand, so it looks like it's going to be this very sweet touching moment, like, oh, they're gonna kiss, yay. And then I like, at first I was like, oh my god, was that an accident? And then I'm like, no, the bitch didn't.
Yeah, I didn't think it was an accident at all. So, I saw it in her eyes. And she
but
was
people in your
like
theater
this.
Were, like, upset by that?
Yeah, you could hear, like, a small gasp.
Like, oh, okay. No, she didn't.
Like, you know, type. I don't even know if that picked up on the microphone. But, you know, just a small gasp of disapproval there. And, you know, so she wasn't, like, Disney princess or anything like that. But I do kind of like the fact that she had a different personality to her. And, you know, as far as the food shots go, like, we've given a 4.5 to another food movie earlier this year in Chef. And I think there's a big difference between these two films. You know, the main similarity being that they're both about food. But in reality, these films really couldn't be further from each other. I think the food scenes in Chef were much more appetizing. I'm not giving 100 Foot Journey a 4.5 based on the food scenes or the shots of the food scenes or anything like that, because they weren't anything special in my opinion. The things that were special in this film were the cinematography, as far as filming the French countryside, getting the dawn shots with the sun in the background, or dusk, or whatever it was, you know, it was the sky orange, and goddamn, they have a lot of fireworks over there, don't they?
Well,
it's like there was like four different
days. Did you realize though that it's
set over the course of a year and a half?
Few years. Because
like that.
There's just after they get there, it's Bastille Day, which is their Independence Day.
Yeah.
So there are fireworks, and then the next time you see it, it's been a year. So he's been in her restaurant, right.
And then there was
this.
Fireworks too, and then there's fireworks in Paris, and
yeah, and you know that's when he's like, you know, kind of missing home, and then the end of the film is, you know, again, so it's supposed to represent the passage of time,
right?
So
but
it's
I
not
mean,
that they just randomly are like,
but there's a lot of fireworks shots in this film because they're separate too. They're all like separate.
Because at first I was wondering, the second time we see fireworks, I was like, oh, is it New Year's?
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, oh again. No, it's been a year.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of a muddled timeline in the sense that the fireworks are really the only indication that a full year has passed. Otherwise,
right.
You have no reason to believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
None of the characters seem to age. His younger siblings look identical. It doesn't look like they're suddenly, you know, 4 years older, even though 4 years have passed. So, you know, there were a couple of little things like that, which I don't feel that they took away from the film in any regard, but you know, they're just little things kind of, for me, in the back of my mind as reducing.
Right. The food is not necessarily my kind of food, so it was whatever.
You've never had the food of the French.
Well, it wasn't
and
just a French food.
And do you even
food.
Like any Indian food?
Indian food, too, yeah. Was,
have you had
I don't
Indian
like,
food? Or
I don't
it?
Like flavors that bold.
Okay.
Like, I don't like very spicy flavors or... you know, the French do a lot of muted flavors. I like in between, you know. I think Mexican food is fantastic. You know, those Cuban sandwiches, though I've never had one, look amazing in Chef. So, the fried stuff in New Orleans and stuff like that. That's more of my stuff. The grilled cheese that he cooked, which has been heralded as the best-looking grilled cheese sandwich in film history. And Chef.
Oh, I was like, there's no grilled cheese in this movie.
No. Yeah, they make much higher profile food in this movie.
Pigeon and...
Yeah, pigeon. The minister, right? Always likes
his pigeon. Every time he comes to the restaurant, he has the same thing, which is pigeon. Cooked a certain way with these certain vegetables.
Right.
So... And as part of kind of the retaliation, when Madame Mallory finds out that they're opening a restaurant, she asks for their menu, just looks it over and kind of like turns her nose at it, walks away. They think nothing of it. Then they go to the market and realize everything on their menu she bought.
Right.
So then he finds out that the minister always gets pigeon, finds out he's going to be eating there that day, and he goes and buys out all the pigeon so that she can't serve him. And, you know, heaven forbid she have to serve him something else.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of a friendly rivalry like that back and forth. And then some of the chefs in Madame Mallory's restaurant take it a little far and cause the fire in Maison Mumbai. And, you know, cause injury and everything like that. So she gets rid of those people and she helps clean some of the damage spray paint that's, you know, thrown on the wall, and that kind of helps them come together a little bit. So
I think it's also important to mention that for me, you know, us having different tastes in this sense, this film had a lot of things working against it for me personally. I'm not particularly fond of French culture, cuisine, accents, etc., etc., etc. Nor am I a fan of Bollywood films or anything like
but
that.
But I don't feel like this went Bollywood in any way,
no,
shape, or
no,
form.
No.
Like
this
I
wasn't
feel
a
like I feel like this could have really been set anywhere. So I don't feel like it was too in your face India or too in your face France. So, like, aside from the accents, I really don't feel like it was too
specific in
right. That and if sense. You're a person that has to catch every line of dialogue and understand every
not
line,
not gonna
of
happen
dialogue.
Until you can subtitle it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no subtitles in the theatrical version of the film, so if someone speaks French, which happens quite frequently, and you don't know French, then you're not gonna understand what they're saying. A lot of the street vendors speak French. I don't speak French. You do a little bit, right? Not completely, though. So you caught most of what they were saying then.
Yeah.
So
it's,
I mean,
like, dude's asking for fish.
So I think that being said, this is more geared towards a more mature audience. I wouldn't say the people who, you know, were loving going to 22 Jump Street are going to necessarily find this as funny as I did or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say, because I like 22 Jump Street. You know, I gave it a 3.5. It's a pretty good rating. And I like this as well. You know, you can have both flavors like that. But at the same time, I'm just...
flavors.
Yeah. I'm just generalizing that, you know, the teenage date couple aren't necessarily...
Yeah, they're not going to see this unless they're foodies. But
even then, you know...
See, and you mentioning that the food wasn't, you know...
It wasn't really a big deal.
To me, this is just like I've said about football movies. I like football movies because it's not focusing on the football.
Right.
This is a food movie that does not focus on the food.
Yeah.
It's... His mother is the one who taught him to cook. There's a fire at their restaurant in India, and she doesn't make it out, so she passes away. They decide to try their luck in Europe. So it's kind of also about the healing of this family through food and, you know, this little rivalry with this Michelin star restaurant, and he wants to become a better chef, and he gets the opportunity to work with her, and he, you know, does become the chef, but while in Paris realizes that this isn't really what he wants, so he comes back home and he says, I don't care about the stars, this is what I want to do and where I want to be. So it's just
spoiler
kind of
alert,
that whole...
I'm just kidding. People know we do spoilers on this show.
Yeah, you shouldn't be listening if you don't want to know. I mean, I'm not giving away every single detail, but to me, like, that's really what the meat of it is. It's
based on a book.
It's finding mm-hmm. who he is and what he wants to do, and
right.
you know, even though his path has taken him to where he thought he wanted to be, he's realizing that's not what he wants, and so
right.
he, you know, leaves all that behind to do what he wants to do. And those
yeah.
are the kinds of things that I really enjoy, which is why it's my favorite of the year.
He doesn't have much to, you know, he pretty much had everything taken away from him, so
mm-hmm.
might as well jump into the deep end and go for it now.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing I want to talk about, we'll wrap it up because we've gone pretty long with this show. But this was a collaboration of Oprah Winfrey and Steven Spielberg.
Hmm.
It was based off of a book. We all know Oprah's big on books.
She is.
I'm guessing this was one of her book club of the month books.
I didn't know it was a
book. I don't
book.
Know. It, yeah. So,
makes me interested in reading it now,
there
though.
There you go. And so she probably brought it to Stevie, and big Stevie Cool, and said, here, read this book.
Steve!
And, yeah, I mean, it shows, you know, it's got the film expertise. It's got the cinematography. It's got...
Do you expect that these things that you're mentioning are going to win any awards?
I think the cinematography will be up for a nomination. From what I've seen, I think this is an Academy movie. I think Helen Mirren will get something, some sort of nomination. I don't think anybody will win, but I think this is their kind of movie. I was
is
reading
there a category for like adaptation from.
I don't know. I don't think so. I was reading on forums that a lot of people don't think this is any sort of Oscar worthy. That it was just kind of a pedestrian film. They used a lot of cliches, and
what film doesn't?
Yeah, but I mean,
like, I hate when people go there like, oh, it was so cliche. Show me one film that doesn't use a single cliche.
I guess it's how many cliches you use and how you use them, but
because everything is a tweak and a recycle of something else, so
yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what they announce for movies. Typically movies that get released later get or have a better chance of getting nominated. It's just a matter of which movies get a chance to be nominated.
So we have never really followed awards or anything.
No,
like that.
I, and again, we're, I still don't really care about them.
We're
going to
pay a little more attention this time around, though, correct?
Yeah, we're.
And
I mean,
when
we're
does
do,
all of that start happening? Do we know?
I think that's in April.
Okay.
So still a ways away.
But like, what's the cutoff? A film has to have been released theatrically by this date to be considered for this year. Anything after that is next year. Is it literally the calendar year? Anything that's released by December 31st is a go?
The fiscal year.
Which is their definition of the fiscal year.
From show to show. From award show to award show.
Well, I mean, they would have to... So is it like, if the show is in April, is it from March to March? Is it February to February? Because
yeah,
they have to have
like
a cutoff at some point.
It's pretty close up to it, because basically...
If anyone knows, let us know, but we'll look it up.
I can look it up right now. I don't want to. But basically, the movies that get released closer to the award show are the ones that have a better chance of winning, because they're fresher in the Academy's mind. And it should be noted that the Academy isn't perfect. Like, nobody is perfect, but a lot of the times...
What? Yes, I am.
A lot of the times they're accused of not actually watching the movies, but just voting.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to be able to look at...
We will have our own goddamn award show, goddammit. We will
get. But in the past, I've like never seen any of the films, and I'm just like, well, I like that actor best, so that's who gets my vote, not having actually seen the performance or whatever. So it'll be interesting, at least for me, to be able to say, like, you know, between these two films, I personally think this one should win because it had a better story.
We'll have our very own, we'll call it the Marys.
I love it!
Anyway.
I'm gonna make a statue. Little statuettes. I'm on it.
All right, awesome. Well, actually, that'd be pretty sad if we made all these physical trophies and we, like, shipped them out. You want to marry.
Oh, my God. We so have to at least make a little something.
Yeah. Still
we can take,
be...
like, a... We can take one of Dexter's little action figure guys and paint them gold or something.
Nice.
I don't know. We'll do something nerdy.
Still won't be as prestigious as a Dundee, but on the level, probably. A little bit less.
Truth.
So, anyway, we've been long enough on this.
So sorry, folks.
We need to get to bed ourselves.
Yes, I'm
because
tired.
We're married and we have a family. We don't get
what,
to stay up.
What, married people can't stay up late?
Well, no, because we won't get up in the morning and then we'll lose in the game of life if we do that. So.
Oh, we should play that game.
Life. What, you want to lose in the game of life to
oh,
me?
Oh, I will so kick your ass.
Please.
It's on.
What, is another handshake bet?
Yes.
For what?
I don't even know. I'm tired.
All right, folks.
Don't mock me.
Good night.
Jerk. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.